What's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good, man. Thank you for asking. And the banger in the paint, Rajan Walia. How you feeling this fine morning?
Man, it's been a long time since we've talked. The NBA's a changed landscape.
Dude, it's been like 3 weeks, eh?
It's a long time, yeah?
Yeah, man, like, I was thinking about it earlier, and the last episode was titled Post All-Star Break Blues. That's how long it's been. Basically, 3 weeks, almost a month. We were complaining about LeBron, you know, almost fighting for a playoff spot, and look at him now. I love it. I just want to run through a quick summary of what we've missed out on over the past, like, 2 or 3 weeks. If you look at the standings right now, you can see that the Lakers are about 4.5 games. Oh, no. 5 games back from the 8th spot.
No, they're a full 7.5 games back.
Wow, I do not know how to add. You are correct.
Yeah, 7.5 games back. Ooh. And I think the last time we talked, we're like, oh, who's going to get that last playoff spot? Is it going to be Sacramento or LA? Well, the joke's on us. It's going to be the Clippers.
The other LA team.
Yeah.
So, that's happened. LeBron, kind of like, I don't know, low-key passed Jordan for fourth place all-time scoring. I say low-key because it was pretty monumental for him as a person, but it didn't really seem like Staples Center was really, like, cherishing the moment. You know what I mean? He hit a left-handed layup against the Nuggets, and then, you know, his teammate said, you know, good job, whatever. It was quick daps, and that was sort of it. And then they got blown out by the Nuggets. So, I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool, but at the same time, it wasn't like, oh my god, we have to stop everything to celebrate this guy like we've done in the past.
Yeah, one of the funnier parts of the season was during one of those really important games where they were obviously trying to make the 8th seed, and now they can't, but during one of those fourth quarters, the fans started chanting, "We want Kobe." So that was great.
As if Kobe would carry this team to the 8th seed.
Oh, he would. Absolutely.
Lakers fans think they would.
Man, yo, Raj, relax.
Yeah. I'm playing. But no, I think I agree. I think this season, just as a fan of the sport, like, it's kind of been a surprise. Like, we all expected the Lakers to make the playoffs and not maybe a top seed, but definitely make the playoffs. And I think they've been flat out a disappointment with or without Anthony Davis and without all the drama that's been surrounding this team. It's been a disappointment for LeBron. In the first year, he's in the West, he doesn't make the playoffs. So, is that expected next year? We'll see.
Yo, where did you guys have the Lakers placing in the playoff structure at the beginning of the year? I had them at 6. Do you guys remember?
I had them in the bottom 3 of the playoff contention. So between 6 and 8, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I had them as high as 4 or 5. So I expected them to be a bit better. I thought they would get it together and like be competitive, kind of like Portland. So I would say probably 5 seed, but nowhere close.
Yeah. Actually, I find the funniest thing about this Lakers narrative right now is that ever since Lonzo Ball went down, that's when they started being like, oh, our defense. He was our defensive anchor, Lonzo. We need him on defense so bad. As if Lonzo Ball was like that key piece that you need. Let's relax, Lakers fans. 7.5 games is not something that Lonzo Ball single-handedly will make up for you. But that's it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is with them not making the playoffs, if they're not able to trade for Anthony Davis, which one of these free agents is going to want to join them now, you know? I just don't really see any path for them to get a guy like Kawhi Leonard. So, I don't know. They might be stuck with this roster the next couple of years if they're not able to make a massive trade.
It can't be any of the top-tier free agents, right? Not Kawhi, not KD. Klay Thompson, I doubt, would go there. I don't think Jimmy Butler would go there behind LeBron. Kyrie, maybe? We heard rumors about that earlier in the year, but he's like the only guy I can see.
Nah, I think that whole narrative is bullshit, too.
I think so, too. I think he's going to New York. So, I don't know. What can we actually see, or who can we actually see going to this Lakers team?
No, but I mean, like, with Kyrie, saying 2 years ago he wanted to get out of LeBron's shadow, wanted his own team, and now 2 years later he wants to go back to Denver. I can't see that happening.
Yeah, but if it was going to happen to any player who would flat out come to the media and say he wants his own team and demand a trade and then go back on his word, it would be Kyrie. I still think they could land a few free agents. It just really depends on if they can get the big fish that they want. I think a player like Kemba Walker could be lured into joining the Lakers. He'd be a nice fit beside LeBron as well. In terms of other players that are on the market this year, I think if the money is right, I think a lot of the players won't hesitate to join LeBron and the Lakers, considering that this was kind of a very bad year and they are a bit more experienced. And I can't imagine Luke Walton sticking around, and I'm sure they're going to surround LeBron with more shooters. Like, this whole surround him with playmakers narrative, that's going to end this year. All those players on one-year contracts are going to be gone. And I still see that there could be a few stars joining him, but I think compared to the beginning of the year where they were like a premium destination, now I think they're just like the middle grade destination. There's other teams that just look more promising.
Yo, LeBron needs more playmakers is hilarious. Let's give him Lance Stevenson and Rajon Rondo, and I swear this Lakers team will be great. Long live
the king. Yeah, and the lineups with Rondo and LeBron together are just awful. So I'm not sure what LeBron was thinking. I get that he wants to have the pressure taken off him. They'll have to make every single play, especially throughout the course of the regular season, so he gets, you know, rest himself more come playoff time. But at the same time, we've seen the past 15 years what type of lineup works best with LeBron. That's having four shooters around him. So,
yeah, the lineups with Rondo are like the worst plus-minus on the team, right?
Yeah, by far.
Yeah, yeah. Remember when you thought Josh Hart was going to be like amazing with LeBron?
I thought he was going to be a serviceable player, and I thought like I didn't expect him to get like 20 points a night, but I expected him still to hit a few baskets, like get a good 12 points, like three rebounds, like consistently. And I think that's an issue with the Lakers. Like they don't really have a consistent shooter, and they picked up Reggie Bullock right before the trade deadline, and he's as streaky as you can get. And I think they really needed a consistent shooter. Another player, I know, just going back on the previous topic, I do see a possibility of Klay Thompson joining them. Just because I feel like he's not going to want to leave California, and he's going to look where who pays him the most, and I don't think he'll mind playing with LeBron. I think he just wants to shoot, make money, and have a good time.
I mean, that's true. I could see that. But I don't think he's going to leave Steph. Yo, sorry. Complete aside here. How great will it be once KD leaves Golden State this year? I think the West is going to open up so much more once he's gone. Because Draymond's not nearly the same player as he used to be either. So it's just going to be Steph and Klay now. Man, I can't wait for that team to be like a regular team again.
I don't know if anybody's ever researched this, but when's the last time in sports somebody's left a three-peat team?
That's a great question. Michael Jordan? I don't know. That's...
Technically, he didn't really leave. I mean, he did, but he's still on the roster, so...
He retired. What are you talking about?
I don't know. He still came back to the team, though.
What?
I mean, like, left from team
no,
to
no,
team.
I meant the Let's second repeat. 96-98? He retired after that.
Yeah, he retired it.
No, I was more so talking about the first one.
Oh, sorry. No, the second one. He retired after that.
Yeah, and I'm talking, like, team to team. Like, yeah, he left that team to go another team of free agency. I'm not really sure that's happened since, what, the 60s or 70s, probably baseball or something.
Yeah, like the closest you can come to it is football, where like the Patriots have won two out of three and then a few players leave. But that's not because they want to leave. It's probably just because they want more money and that's why they leave. Because
Belichick said, get the hell out of here. I'm done with
you.
Yeah,
he's like, I've serviced you enough. Like, you've reached your potential. You're done.
Exactly.
Yeah. Speaking just about the Lakers, I think one thing that's like, just indicative of how poorly managed this season was from like a management point of view is the trade for Mike Muscala.
Sorry, of all things to bring up.
No, like I thought they were doing well when before like LeBron got injured on Christmas Day with a groin injury and he missed, yes, we know, like 16, 17 games. But I thought Zubac was a good player. He was young, like he's a low salary cap hit. He's a player that at the end of the day, next year, you don't mind having him on your roster. Not to say that Mike Muscala is not a good player, it's just he's done absolutely nothing, like absolutely nothing since coming to the Lakers.
Yeah, I don't really know if that moves the needle at all, though. I mean, either way.
No, like, I know.
Zubac, he's a young player and everything, but is he going to be a starting center in the NBA? Probably not.
But is he a good player to have for, like, on a $2 million hit on your contract that allows you to get another big player in?
Yeah, but when you're trying to make the playoffs this year, I get why they made the trade, because they decided to go away from the playmaker type lineups around LeBron and just get him a bunch of shooters. Muscala is a pretty decent three-point shooter, so
yeah.
I got the idea behind it, but in the end, it doesn't really matter, mm-hmm. like most things. Yeah.
Both their contracts are done this year anyways, right? So just to back up Josh's point, it's literally just to try to save this season.
Yeah.
Or it was, I guess.
Yeah, I just think that it was just poorly managed, like wouldn't have made that trade. I don't think it would have made a difference. I don't think Zubac's going to be averaging 20 points and giving them an extra 5-10 wins, but I just think that the season's been terrible for the Lakers, and we talked about them far too much for a team that's sitting 11th in the West.
But LeBron's fourth in all-time scoring. We need to talk about LeBron. He's going to start filming Space Jam 2 soon.
I'm done. I'm gonna time out for the next 5 minutes. I can't handle this.
Yo, over under two Lakers being part of the raw of the cast for Space Jam 2.
Under.
Yeah, way under.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's a shame. Lonzo couldn't get his triple B's into the movie. That sucks.
I think JaVale would be in there.
Yo, JaVale would be hype if he was like Sean Bradley.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Or maybe he'll be a Monstar.
Yeah. And LeBron seems to like JaVale.
Yeah, but he's not going to be a current Laker.
True. All right. Let's move on away from the Lakers. Let's talk about the rest of the West. The part that actually matters. Between the 4th and the 8th spot, we have 2.5 games separating them. Even the 3rd. So Houston sitting at the 3rd spot, and the Clippers are in the 8th spot. 3.5 game separation. The West is pretty wide open, aside from like the 1 and 2 right now. You have Utah, San Antonio, and the Clippers tied for 6, 7, 8 at 7.5 games back from first spot. And then OKC and Portland currently sitting at 4-5. Dude, this playoff seeding is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like that every year in the West, too. It's always a race between the last four seeds, usually, but now we have the 3-8 seed this year. But I think Houston is pretty clearly going to be the third seed now. They've won 8 in a row, and they're playing the best ball that they've played all year, really. And their role players have really stepped up the last couple of weeks as well, and they have a set rotation now, and you know, guys like Kenneth Faried and Austin Rivers have really stepped up for them since you know, joining the Rockets halfway through the year with Austin Rivers, and then a couple weeks ago with Kenneth Faried. So they actually have depth and guys that can, you know, switch on the perimeter. Their defense, I think especially, has turned up another notch the last few weeks.
Yeah, great job by Daryl Morey picking up these guys. Faried was essentially out of the league last year. You know what I mean? Or like even earlier this year, he couldn't get any playing time with Brooklyn. And then he goes to Houston as soon as Clint Capella gets injured, averages almost a double-double, like right off the bat, without knowing the system, without doing anything, literally just like diving to the rim every play and just bringing lots of energy on defense. And then Austin Rivers has found his footing on the team. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and one thing that they have that the Lakers, for example, we talked about already, just don't have is role definition. You know, if you're a center with the Rockets, you know exactly what you're going to be doing on a nightly basis. You're going to be picking and rolling to the rim every single play. And on defense, you're going to be switching a lot on the perimeter. You need guys that are mobile, obviously. And even though Faried in previous years hasn't really shown the propensity to be a good defensive player. This year he's actually been pretty decent. He's trying really hard and he's super athletic, so he's able to guard, you know, these small guards in the perimeter and do a decent job.
Yeah, I think the Rockets are a shoo-in for the 3 seed as well. I actually think they might even push Denver for the 2 seed just in terms of how well they're playing. There isn't much of a gap between 2 and 3 and even bring Golden State into the picture, but I think Golden State's like a lock to be the number 1 seed. I think this is probably the most competitive the West has been as a conference, as a whole, like as far as I can remember, because usually there's a few teams in the bottom that are like struggling to get 20 wins or 25 win teams. And it looks this year like every team besides Phoenix is going to have at least 30 wins, it seems like. And I feel that in terms of on any given night, I think the difference between Denver and surprisingly the Clippers isn't as big as it was couple of years ago, in terms of 2 versus 8 seed. I wouldn't be surprised if OKC stays in the 4 seed. Between Utah, San Antonio, and the Clippers, I think it's going to come down to the final game. And I think some teams might even want to sit out a few players to look for a favorable matchup in the first round.
Yeah, and I think for the top 4 seeds, this is like the current standings are what we want going forward, because then you have Golden State and OKC in the 1-4 playing in the second round, and then Denver and Houston playing in the second round. So that'll be 2 really interesting series. And I think Oklahoma has the best chance, maybe besides Houston, of knocking off the Warriors in the West anyway, even though it's a very small chance, obviously. I think Houston has the best chance overall besides maybe 2 or 3 of the Eastern Conference teams. But the current iteration of the conference, I think, is the best type of seeding you can get in terms of playoff matchups in the second and third round anyway.
What do you guys think about Portland? Because what I see is a team that is pretty much like a duplicate from the last 2 years of being in the season. And I think they're going to be a team that's going to go into the first round, maybe playing against OKC. And I see them another first round exit like last year against New Orleans, where it's going to be maybe 4, maybe 5 games, and I just don't think the formula has changed enough for them.
Yeah, with Portland, they have improved this year, mostly because Nurkic has taken another step in his development. He's become a very good rim protector, and he's been pretty good on the perimeter, too. And I don't think you can trap them as easily as New Orleans trapped them in the first round, where they had, you know, 2 or 3 guys go to Dame and CJ every single play. I think Nurkic is a lot better at, you know, short rolling and making passes on the perimeter. Get the open 3-point shooters in the corners. And he's a better finisher than he was last year, too. So if he steps up, I could see them maybe winning a round. I think they'll be competitive, though, in the first round this year, unlike last year.
Who do you think is their most consistent wing player? Is it Rodney Hood or Aminu at this point?
No, it's Aminu for sure. Yeah, I mean, Harkless has been really good the last couple of weeks too, but
he's on and off. Like really on and off. I wouldn't trust this team, to be honest. Like Dame can get out of double teams or find the open man pretty easily once he's doubled, but then once you're swinging to guys like Aminu or Harkless or Layman, if he even gets to touch the floor, now that they have brought in Enes Kanter, Terry Stotts has been playing Kanter a lot more than Layman, right? Like, yeah. I wouldn't trust this team outside of their guard play still. And Nurkic, obviously.
Yeah, Nurkic has been obviously an upgrade this season, and he's putting up good numbers. It's just I see where they're going to end up. They're not going to end up higher probably than 4. And they're going to end up playing either OKC, Houston, Denver, or Golden State, like depending on if they fall all the way to 8th. And I think all those matchups are terrible for them, and they just rely so heavily on their 1-2 guard that I can see a first-round exit, maybe not as bad as New Orleans, but I really don't see them winning many games in the first round against any of those teams.
Yeah, I think home court matters for them more than almost any of the other teams that are bunched up in the middle there. I think Utah, they have an identity, and like they're one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, obviously, and the Gobert factor in the playoffs is huge. With Portland, their role players, their games don't really travel on the road. Like, they're one of the worst benches in the NBA on the road. And at home, they're okay. Like, you get some games where Curry hits, you know, 3 or 4 threes. Lehman's been pretty good overall this year. Rodney Hood is a guy that I just don't trust at all. I mean, his game hasn't really gone anywhere the last 2 years. He hasn't really taken a step up in any facet of the game. His defense is still below average. His three-point shooting is not good for a guy whose shot looks really nice. He's basically Martell Webster. His shot looks really nice, but it never really goes in.
Trailblazers legend Martell Webster.
Yeah, new version.
Yeah, Martell Webster was better than Rodney Hood. I'm just saying. I'd rather have Martell Webster on this team than Rodney Hood.
So disappointing because his shot looks so smooth.
Yeah, I used a lot. He came out of Duke, right?
Yeah.
Man, he was nice. What a shame. Raj, where do you think this team ends up? Like, realistically.
Portland, that is?
Yeah.
I don't see them getting home court. And if they do, like, they're basically gonna end up playing OKC, I think, in the first round. It might be four, like, they might get the fourth seed and play OKC in the five, just because OKC has still a tough schedule coming up. Yeah. But other than that, I see them, like I said, like, I'm, once the playoffs are set, I'm going to bet that they get first round exit in probably 4 or 5 games.
No, I think if they play OKC, they'll win a couple games at least, especially with, like, Paul George's shoulder looking as it does right now. He hasn't played well since he's come back from the shoulder injury at all. He's shooting awful the last couple games. So if he's not right, Portland, if they get home court, they might end up upsetting Oklahoma if Paul George is not right.
I think that's a stretch. That's a very big stretch, but we'll see.
Well, yeah, the team is very reliant on Paul George now. Ever since, I guess since the beginning of this year, he's sort of taken over as the main offensive threat, right?
Yeah, but I think the difference between OKC and Portland is, I think OKC has, their wings are super athletic. They're solid defensively. And I feel that, and they're also very long. So I feel that if they need to trap Dame or get McCollum into situations like late in the clock where they're like sending a double towards him, I think that I don't trust the Portland supporting cast enough. And I think OKC can just play defense and get transition points. And they've played without Paul George for the year before he joined last year. And I think they'll manage again. And it doesn't seem like Portland's really much of a threat besides their two guards.
Like, you can say the same thing about OKC, though. Aside from Paul George and Westbrook, they're not really threats either. Even Westbrook this year, I wouldn't consider, like, a crazy threat. He can't really shoot this year.
Sir, I will not allow you to besmirch Steven Adams like that.
True. Yeah, but he's not going to create anything for himself.
No, but Steven Adams is a beast.
Yeah, but he's
so consistent. I think Adams and Nurkic sort of cancel each other out in this conversation.
I agree. But, like, who as a player or even as a coach, like, which supporting cast would you want better, OKC's or Portland's? Obviously, take away the big three from each team, like Nurkic, Dame, and McCollum on Portland, and then obviously Westbrook, PG, and Adams. Which supporting cast do you probably trust more or would want?
I think OKC's bench has an identity, whereas Portland's bench really doesn't. I mean, OKC's bench comes in, they play super, you know, aggressive defense. Dennis Schroeder is going to take over most of the offense. He's going to play most of the time with one of their stars, obviously. And then, you know, Markieff Morris hasn't been good since he's come over, but at least he has playoff experience. And he's a guy that can score 15 points for you in a playoff game and change the course of a game. So they have some guys that can do some things off the bench, whereas with Portland, you know, Cantor's a huge liability, obviously. So I don't think he's going to play a lot in the playoffs. And I think that they're making a mistake in playing him a lot more than Zach Collins.
That's true. I totally forgot about Markieff Morris, to be honest. What was he? What was his playoff experience before? Washington?
Yeah, he's had a few series there.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, fine. You've convinced me. I guess OKC does have a more reliable bench, but I wouldn't say they're miles ahead of Portland's bench for sure.
Yeah, but I think history also, you have to kind of look at what happened last year and... I'm not saying it's going to happen and this is the exact same Portland team. I'm just saying if I had to put money, which I will end up betting on the playoffs, I'm going to say that Portland seems like a team that's destined for a first round exit, despite the numbers maybe saying otherwise.
Dang. Yeah, in terms of teams you trust to, you know, do the things they're good at in the playoffs, I think you would probably rank them 7th overall in the current playoff iteration. I mean, behind San Antonio as well. Yeah, I mean, Popovich in the playoffs, the guy's a genius. So, I would trust the Spurs to be able to implement their game plan over a team like Portland. There's ways to slow them down, as we saw last year, whereas with San Antonio, Pop just gets super creative, so you never know what's going to happen with San Antonio.
Yeah, creative isolation ball. let's chill. Rudy Gay, LaMarcus Aldridge, and DeMar DeRozan. Let's relax about this.
They're
going to
all of a sudden start playing the beautiful game in the
playoffs.
They're
going to start shooting threes. DeMar DeRozan's going to turn into a 50% three-point shooter.
Yeah.
Hey, if they play Denver in the first round, that series might be a toss-up.
Nah, it won't be. How do you figure?
They've played them tough this year. And again, the coaching advantage is massive in the playoffs. And you have guys that have been there before with San Antonio, whereas Denver, how many guys on the roster have been to the playoffs before? You have Millsap.
And Isaiah.
And Isaiah Thomas, who's not going to play much in the playoffs.
Oh, man. Can I just do a quick rant about having Isaiah on this team?
Oh, let's hear it.
Dude, we got to get him out of here. Like, he's hit a lot of shots, but he's such a defensive liability. It actually really hurts. And he slows down the offense. He doesn't, like, they don't run the ball as much with Isaiah on the floor as they do with Monte Morris. It's killing me watching him on the floor. I can't handle it.
Yeah, in terms of the most obvious things to happen in the 2018-19 regular season behind, but you know, besides the Lakers struggling with all these so-called playmakers around LeBron, I think number two is once Isaiah Thomas came back, Denver's rotation, especially off the bench, would be in shambles because Monte Morris is a way better player than Isaiah Thomas at this point, sadly.
I told you, man, but you just wanted your boy IT back. Didn't work. He doesn't fit. Where would Isaiah Thomas actually fit in the league right now? The Lakers?
Orlando.
Yeah.
Yo, Orlando might be a playoff team. How about that?
Yeah, let's go to the East. I think the East is more interesting in terms
of... I mean, last podcast I said they would based on the schedule, but sort of like Detroit, they just keep losing with games that they should be winning.
So. Wait, I'm sorry, what?
Kind of like Detroit.
Detroit's won 5 straight, my friend. 8-2 in
their last
10.
Over the course of the regular season, though, they keep losing these games against, like, you know, Memphis and Dallas and teams like that.
Can you just acknowledge that Detroit has won 5 straight?
I don't want to talk about them.
Can you acknowledge that they are 2-0 against your Toronto Raptors?
Yeah, without Kawhi, congratulations.
A win's a win. And they did have Kawhi in the first game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did. Fluke.
Did they?
Can you confirm? I think so.
I'm pretty sure they did.
They did, yeah. That was early in the season.
Yeah. Those are revenge games for Coach Casey. And my God, he got his revenge.
Yeah, Coach Casey is really good at winning regular season games, but, you know, come playoff time, he's trash.
Okay, so Detroit is sitting in the 6th seed in the East, half a game ahead of Brooklyn, who's in 7th right now. Do you think Detroit wants to play Toronto, or if the standings sit as they are right now, which I don't think they will, obviously, Philly, who is in 3rd, who would Detroit match up better with? Or, you know, take the opposite stance, does Toronto want Detroit or Brooklyn?
I don't think Toronto cares, to be honest. I mean, Detroit can muck up the game, obviously, and in the playoffs that matters because, you know, you can play a certain style and keep close by, you know, running down the shot clock every play. But yeah. I think ultimately Brooklyn's a better matchup for Toronto just because Toronto has the size advantage at most positions. Whereas with Detroit, I don't know, Blake is really good against the Raptors despite, you know, you'd think a guy like Siakam may be able to slow him down a little bit, but the best matchup so far that we've seen in the two games is with OG against Blake, because OG actually has a little bit more weight to him.
Yeah. Siakam's too slim. Blake's a big body, man.
Yeah. Blake just powers him inside.
How about this for a new narrative? If Detroit and Philadelphia face off, you will have Tobias Harris going against Blake Griffin, two guys that were traded for each other last year.
Yep, and then you have the Drummond and Embiid matchup that has become synonymous in the NBA for Embiid just dominating him, but that'll be fun.
My God, that would be an amazing series to watch. At least just for the trash talk.
Yeah, but I think that series, in terms of being competitive, I think Philly would wipe the floor with Detroit.
Wow. The disrespect.
Yeah. Well, like, take away those two options, right, from Detroit. like Drummond.
Well, you're not taking away Blake Griffin.
You're not taking away, but I think that you have a matchup situation where Philly has players that they can throw towards him, and at the end of the day, Philly just has so many more weapons than Detroit does.
I think every team has more weapons than two guys, right?
True.
Detroit's not going to rely on Reggie Jackson to hit shots all the time, or, you know, Luke
Kennard. Well, he's the reason why they're rolling right now, though. He's actually been it's him well in the last 15 games.
Funny enough, it's him, Wayne Ellington, and Luke Kennard carrying the perimeter.
I think Detroit is actually like the team that you want to play in the playoffs if you're, you know, one of the higher seeds, because even though they can muck up the game, like, you can easily just double team Blake and force these role players to make shots, and none of these guys are reliable in the playoffs.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if the Raps had to choose a team that they had to play between Detroit, Brooklyn, Miami, and let's say Orlando, because we really don't know who's going to be in that final spot, I'd say the Raps would want to play Detroit over any of those other teams. Maybe Miami as well, because they just destroyed them last night, and Miami is really not that good. But I think Detroit is the team that they would want to play, because at the end of the day, Detroit's kind of a team that if you play them, I hope, at least four times in a row, that you're going to be able to figure them out and throw different looks at them and slow them down. Whereas then I feel Brooklyn could cause some matchup problems, and I feel like Brooklyn's quite athletic and young, and I think they can push the Raps a lot.
And you need guys in the perimeter to make plays in the playoffs, and Detroit has one guy in Blake Griffin. And plus, you know, trying to play Detroit, they would have four home games since all the Raptors fans bust down to Detroit every single time they play. So that'll be great.
It didn't help them last time.
Regular season doesn't matter, but
I'm going to hold this
as we've seen the last couple of years with Toronto. But, you know, as a Raptors fan, I actually prefer to play Brooklyn just because I want to see an exciting series. And even though, like, Toronto will probably beat them by average of 10 points every game, like, at least it's going to be a really high scoring series because Brooklyn can really score them all.
Did Brooklyn steal a game against Toronto?
Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah, they beat them once. I started their role, actually. Yeah, they were under 500 for a while, and they won that game against Toronto. I think Kawhi might have been sitting that game. It was a really tight game, and they won in overtime, I think.
Yeah.
D'Angelo had a massive game.
That's right. That was early on, though, right?
Yeah, they started to find their identity after that game in terms of how their guards would play together. And, you know, once LeVert has come back since then, I mean, he hasn't played that well, obviously, come back from injury, but that'll take time. At least Dinwiddie's back now, though.
The fit with LeVert on this team is kind of strange now, because after LeVert got hurt, that's when you saw D'Angelo Russell just, like, go
take
nuts.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah, and become the all-star. But now that LeVert's back, it's sort of like he doesn't really have the same kind of place on the team anymore. Right before, he was carrying a lot of the offensive load, and now he's just trying to figure out where he really belongs.
Yeah, they turn him into one of the guys almost. He doesn't really handle the ball nearly as much. He's turned into Damari Carroll, which sort of sucks for him. But you know, I mean, he was the guy before the injury, and then D'Angelo turned into that guy, and Dinwiddie was the second guy off the bench, and they have to figure that out, because he hasn't really... I don't think he's been starting the last couple of games either. I think they brought him off the bench the last couple of games.
Yeah, and, he's off the bench now. He's like seventh man. Yeah. He's not even immediately off the bench.
Yeah, but I mean, those two teams are playing tonight, so Detroit is playing in Brooklyn, so that's probably going to determine who the 6 and 7 seeds are going to be.
Ooh, by the time this goes up, the listeners will know who it is, because it'll probably be released on late Tuesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah. I guess we'll see. Hopefully,
let's go Pistons.
Pistons, whoa. Yeah.
What? Oh, yeah, I guess so. Mike,
I want to see that Brooklyn series. Fuck Brooklyn!
Okay, Masai. That's a $5,000 fine. Thank you very much. Patties. All right, what about the 8th spot? Right now, we have Miami sitting in 8 with Orlando and Charlotte a game behind them. And then the rest of the East is a wash. So who cares?
Let me just speak for everyone and just say, who the fuck cares?
No. I care. Wow. I think Orlando's going to make it. I just don't think Miami's quite good. They do have less games remaining. I believe they have 14 games left, and Miami has 16. So Miami could pull away quite a bit if they were able to win those next two games. But I think Orlando's just the team that they're more inconsistent than Miami, but I think Orlando would be a funner team to watch in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to go higher than the 8th seed, so they'll end up playing Milwaukee, who's pretty much locked up the number 1 seed at this point. But I think it could just be a fun series. I think Milwaukee would still win it in 4. But I think it'd be a funner series than watching them play Miami and absolutely destroy them.
I kind of want Miami to make it just so we can watch Dwayne Wade change jerseys every game.
With Giannis at the end of every game.
It'll be like Giannis, Bledsoe, Brogdon, and then someone Middleton. Super random. No, like Connaughton or like Pau Gasol. You know what I mean? Like someone super random. That's what I really want. Wait, one last dance.
You know, as long as Charlotte doesn't make the playoffs, I'm cool. Because that team is would be the easiest team to beat in the East if they were to make it after the, you know, I guess above Detroit. So all you have to do is just slow down everything else and then just let Kemba try to shoot 50 times.
Yeah, or let Jeremy Lamb take over.
As much as he can.
My God.
The team is awful to watch.
Have you actually watched one of their games this year? Like a full game?
When they played the Raps.
Okay, aside from watching the Raptors play, have you watched a full game?
Early in the year, I did a couple of times because Kemba was really rolling at the start of the season. Then he sort of tired out a little bit because he's had a couple injuries recently. But at the start of the year, he's putting up like 35 points a game. He was just on fire. So that was fun to watch. But again, he has nothing around him. I mean, their second best player is probably Cody Zeller.
No. It's Jeremy Lamb.
Nah, I don't think so.
Nicholas Batum?
Oh my.
No.
Oh my God.
Hell no. He's been absolutely an atrocity. Yeah. But that guy's like the ultimate, you know, get your money and just chill type of guy.
Hey, get paid.
He's the epitome of that.
Yeah, do you think that guy's terrible. Tony Parker is done after this year?
He was done 3 years ago.
Yo, he's still playing. He has like a good game every 2 weeks.
Yeah, the corpse of Tony Parker is still on the floor. It doesn't mean he's playing.
That's... Damn.
Very morbid.
Yeah, I don't even know how to respond to this right now.
Yeah.
All right, let's you got anything else, or do you guys want to go to Stats Corner here?
I'm just talking one quick point. I know you said no Raps talk, but it's still frustrating to see Kawhi sitting out so many games. Obviously, they didn't need to have him sit out against Miami, but I don't see why he needed to anyways. And at the end of the day, like, they just need more minutes together because it's better to figure out your team chemistry and your best lineups and who plays well. And the more minutes, the better. And I just don't see a point why Kawhi's sitting so many games, even down the stretch. Like, they have probably, 14 games left or so. And he's still sitting, every 3 or 4 games, he's sitting once.
Let me tell you why he's sitting. It was the front end of a back-to-back, and tonight they're playing the Eastern Conference champions, Cleveland Cavaliers.
Uh-oh. Yeah, it's going to be a really tough game for them.
I see. That,
you have to get through the Cleveland Cavaliers to become the Eastern Conference champions.
On the road, right?
They are in Cleveland. That is correct.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, now I see why they definitely sat them last night.
It makes total sense. I mean... Cleveland's already only eliminated from the playoff contention already, but still, you always got to bring your A game against this team.
Yeah. As a Raptors optimist this year, I think come playoff time, we're all going to be thanking Toronto's management for doing this and using the load management to make sure that Kawhi gets his rest, because come playoff time, he is going to be the best player in the Eastern Conference.
Over Giannis? Relax.
Yeah, over Giannis, no way. No.
Giannis has the most transferable game into the playoffs of anyone in the league.
Does he, though? He can't shoot.
It doesn't matter. He bodies people. He can slow the game down and literally just dominate inside.
No, when teams have a chance to scheme for Milwaukee and have a game in between, I think that you're going to see a whole different type of game plan against them. And I think they're going to be able to limit one of the two, either the three-point shooting or Giannis. They're going to have a hard time scoring in certain games.
It's going to be Al Horford versus Giannis in the second round, right?
No, but if you're asking somebody, who would you trust more at this point in the playoffs to perform at a high level? You would take Giannis over Kawhi?
I'd say, as of right now, I'd say they're probably equal.
Yeah.
No way.
I wouldn't I wouldn't say Kawhi is hands down better than Giannis in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, I would agree.
You are insane. Kawhi has played in the most high-pressure moments, and he's been a champion finals MVP. Giannis hasn't made it out of the first round. He has no idea what that's like. You have to go. You even said yourself a couple podcasts ago, like, you have to go through the losses and the heartbreak in order to better yourself and come back a better player, right? And Giannis hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, it's true. You're totally right. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying I think he'll show up.
And I just don't see a reason why he wouldn't. Like, the team is so centered around him, like, doing well, that I just think that they're going to be a team. And especially being the number one seed, like, they're going to have a nice role. Whoever they end up playing, they're going to probably destroy them in four or five games if it gets to five.
In the first round.
Yeah, in the first round. But that's where you build your confidence, right? And you say, hey, you know what? This is the playoffs. Like, yeah, the games are a little more, they're tight. They're a little more defensive. You don't get those calls. But they're going to have a nice little, like they're going to get some momentum rolling into the second round. And I think that at the end of the day, he'll be the best player in the Eastern Conference. I don't think Kawhi is going to be, like, much worse or not show up. I'm not saying that on him. I'm just saying that I think Giannis is set up in a formula to succeed.
When you're in a close game in the playoffs and you have to get a score, you would prefer to have the ball in Giannis's hands versus Kawhi, a guy who can't shoot and a guy who you can really condense your defense on, versus a guy who's hit tough shots in the playoffs and made amazing plays in crunch time.
If you're asking me that question, I would rather have the ball in Kyrie's hand.
Ooh, okay.
But if you're asking me, are you asking me as a whole in a game? I think Giannis will be fine. And I think he will be, like, the game is not just crunch possessions. Like, Milwaukee might be in a situation where they don't have many opportunities where they have these, like, oh, the ball's in your hand, 20 seconds left, last shot. They might not be in those situations. Am I going to fault Giannis for it? No. Like, maybe he's just going to set up his team and they're going to be in a situation where they're up 10 and or 15 with a minute left.
I think Milwaukee's in the position this year that Toronto was last year, in that there's been a lot of situations where they've blown out a ton of teams, obviously, this year, and they haven't had a lot of close games, whereas Toronto has this year. It's been the complete opposite effect for Toronto this year versus last year. And, you know, when Milwaukee actually had crunch time games, they weren't going to Giannis in the last 2 minutes of the game, because he's not a guy that can, like, he can't really create his own shot off the dribble from the perimeter, because you can really condense your defense with a set defense against him. So they've been going to Middleton more often in crunch time than Giannis, because he's just a better creator off the dribble and getting his shot in, like, the mid-range area. Because a lot of the time in crunch time, you can't get to the basket because you have so many guys just packing the paint, right?
Yeah. That's true. That's
a good point. Yeah, I just think that at the end of the day, that they're both, I think it's going to be, if it gets to it, it's going to be 1A, 1B. They're both going to be good playoff performers. I think both have a lot to offer. I just think Giannis is probably the safer pick to say the best player in the East.
Well, according to your clutch calculation, they're 2A, 2B behind Kyrie.
Well, if you're talking about game-winning shot, there's some players just have it. Like, you know what? Before, they would be 3A, 3B. Kyrie would be number 2, and number 1 would be Robert Horry, even this day and age.
Wow. What a major stretch.
I know. I'm pulling it there, but...
Wow. Okay.
I look forward to 2 months from now when Milwaukee's out in the second round, and I can just, you know...
Yo, do you seriously think they'll be out in the second round against... Let's say Boston. Yes. Yeah.
100%.
So you think it'll still be Toronto, Boston in the East Finals?
100%.
No, I hate to break it to you, but I can see Milwaukee, Boston.
Milwaukee, Boston's going to be.
No, because
Boston's going to get to third?
Yeah, they're only a game back.
True. Who's got the easiest schedule out of all these, aside from Toronto?
I think Philly does, but I have to check.
Yeah, it goes Philly, Milwaukee.
No, but forget about Milwaukee, Toronto. It really depends on those three teams, like Indiana, Philly, and Boston. So, like, who's going to end up?
Philly, Boston, and then Indiana in terms of strength of schedule. So Philly has the easiest.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting if Boston got to third. That's, like, the last thing Toronto wants.
Of course. Like, having to play. Yeah, but at the end of the day, it looks like Milwaukee's number one, and Milwaukee is going to either play one of those, obviously, three teams, but I think Boston could easily end up number 3 seed. They'll they would play the Raptors hard, and Milwaukee Boston would probably be the final Eastern Conference Finals that I would predict.
Hot damn, food for thought. Let's move on to Stats Corner, Josh.
So for Stats Corner this week, I decided to go with more of the hustle stats. So I got a few for you today. So the first one, we're going to go with charges drawn per game. Can you guess the top five in the NBA thus far this season?
Lowry,
yeah.
Lowry is number three.
Oh, really?
Whoa, okay.
Number one is number one by far, by the way. He's a guy that's consistently been in the top three with charges drawn. You're probably not going to get it, but he's always up there.
This is such a random stat.
Yeah, no. East Horford? Or West?
No, Horford's not in the top ten.
Is number one in the East or West?
East.
Interesting. East. Interesting.
Draws, charges. Marcus Smart.
Ooh.
Marcus Smart is not in the top ten.
Are we counting flopping? Like
flopping, so
flopping beat by number one by far.
Okay. I thought flopping charges were like a separate category, or were they combined? I wasn't sure.
To give you a hint, every single one in the top five is in the East.
Okay.
Give me the Eastern Conference loves taking charges.
Give me Otto Porter Jr.
Nope, he is not in there. You got two big guys. You got three big guys and then two point guards.
Turner?
So you've already got one point guard.
Turner?
No, Turner blocks shots. No, he doesn't take charges.
Yeah, he does both. He's soft. He used to be soft. Who takes charges in the East? As a big?
Thaddeus Young?
He's actually number six.
Oof. Oh, wow. Oh, Vooch.
Nope, Vooch is not in the top 10.
Oh, man, we're struggling here.
Yeah, it's from a team that we talked about a little bit on the podcast and about being in the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoff contention.
Someone on Miami, eh?
Nope.
Give me Aaron Gordon.
Aaron Gordon is not on the list.
Oh my god.
All right, so number one is on the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
Lucky. Middleton?
Nope.
Is it Bledsoe?
Nope.
Oh my god, we're trash.
Big man.
Oh, Rob Lopez.
No, Lopez block shots, not him.
That's what I mean. Who else? It's not Giannis.
Nope.
Ilyasova?
That is correct. Ersan is by far number one in the NBA.
What's the difference between Ilyasova and number two?
Lowry.
He has 0.78 charges drawn a game versus 0.43 for the next guy. Oh, we're going per game. Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was trying to think of like guys who would actually get minutes to do it a lot. I was thinking raw numbers.
Well, in terms of totals, Ersan's at 42 for the year, and this guy who's on Detroit is 27.
Detroit. Not a big man, I'm assuming.
Big man.
The hell? It's not Blake.
It is Blake.
What? He takes charges?
He does. He takes a lot of them.
How is that possible?
Number four is on your Toronto Raptors.
Danny Green.
Nope.
Oh. I'm so confident.
Danny Green, yeah. Siakam?
Nope. If you've watched the Raptors in the last couple of games, you'll know who it is.
Is it Mark?
It is Mark.
Yeah. That's why we wouldn't think of him.
And last, because you're never going to get this one, is Kemba Walker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we could have gotten there.
After playoff like contention. Another 20 minutes.
All you would have said is playoff contention, point guard. You know, there's only so many.
Yeah.
It's not going to be DJ Augustine.
So for the next stat, I'll let you choose. So we have screen assists per game. This is a stat that basically qualifies you as a big man because you're the guy who's screening the ball, leading your point guard, whoever's handling the ball, to get a wide open shot. Or we can do contested twos per game, which again goes back to big men and how many shots they contest in the paint, essentially.
Raj, why don't you pick?
No, Peter, it's up to you.
All right, let's go with contested twos so Raj can talk about more big men.
Okay. You know me well.
So pretty much all of these guys are centers.
So they take contested twos?
No, these are the guys that contest the most two-point shots per game. So they're like the centers who contest shots at the rim.
Oh, I see. Okay, Rudy Gobert?
Gobert is number three at 13.8 per game.
Joel?
Joel is number nine at 10.3.
Oh, what a scrub.
Steven Adams.
Adams is number six at 11.
Al Horford?
Horford is not on the list.
Oh, my God. Oh, Giannis.
Giannis is also not on the list. This is basically only centers on this list.
Okay. Giannis is a center.
Turner.
Turner is surprisingly not on the list.
Oh, wow. Okay, Jared Allen.
Yes, number nice. Two at 14.
Nice Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number one. Who is the number one two-point contesting center?
It's a lot. If you've watched this team enough, you know like they're the one team that makes sure that they allow the most threes per game, but they also allow the least amount of two-point shots in the paint per game in terms of made field goals.
Is it the Spurs?
Nope.
Oh.
But LaMarcus is at number five.
Okay. Ooh. So they let a lot of threes, but they don't let a lot of twos.
Ooh. Paint shots, anyway.
Yeah, paint shots. It's good perimeter defense. Bad perimeter
defense. Who's the number one defense in the NBA right now?
That's a good question. Who is number one?
Probably, OKC is number like two or three, I think.
Is it Milwaukee?
Who's been consistently number one? Yes, correct.
Brook Lopez?
Brook Lopez is number one at 15.6.
Wow. I see.
Wow.
They
wow,
really
wow.
pack the paint, but they also allow the most amount of threes, but it hasn't hurt them yet. So that's a formula that has worked surprisingly. You would think it'd be the opposite, where if you, you know, allow that many threes per game, that
you'd lose.
It would hurt your defense. But as long as you protect the rim, you know,
well,
you're going to be a really good defense.
To be honest, it seems like more logical to protect the paint because you're like obviously you're shooting a lower percentage, but you get an extra point. But you're also giving up less second chance opportunities, like less possessions, because hopefully if you're protecting the paint, you're able to rebound well.
Yeah. And they also have lengthy defenders. So even they're letting guys shoot, there's still like a mild contest rather than like a full contest.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. So how many more do we have?
You just have one left. He's from the Western Conference. And he's surprisingly on this. He's actually improved a lot on defense. He's been more consistent this year.
My boy Jokic.
Jokic is not on the list.
Nurkic.
Nurkic is number six, tied with Steven Adams.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, tied. He's improved a lot. What about Montrezl Harrell?
Oh.
No.
Crazy. Harrell's
not on the list.
Is it Cat?
It is Cat, number four.
Hot damn. Why don't we go through your last one, too, since you already have it pulled up?
All right, just one moment. So screen assists per game, which big man sets the best screens to allow his point guard or guard the most amount of easy shots off the pick and roll?
Okay, I'll go first here. Draymond.
Draymond is not on the list.
Really? That's surprising.
All of these guys are centers again.
Yeah.
He probably doesn't qualify as a big man.
I see.
Joel Embiid.
Joel is not on the list. Philadelphia actually runs the least amount of pick and rolls every game, so that's probably why.
Yeah, and they do a lot of like runoffs, Redick.
Yeah, they have a lot of DHOs. Those don't count as screens?
No, they do, but overall, they run a lot more like motion stuff.
All right. Give me
Nurkic.
Yeah.
Yep, Nurkic is at number three. So think of this as, you know, the smaller guards who score a lot of points and which big man gets them open.
Horford.
Horford's not on the list.
Bah, you lied to me. who's Charlotte's big man?
We've already mentioned him.
Is it stupid Cody Zeller?
It is, number four. He's actually number two, sorry, at 5.4.
Oh my God.
Wait, what? Say that again?
He's number two at 5.4 screen assists per game.
Jesus Christ. Rudy?
Rudy's number one at 6 screen assists per game.
Not surprising. Donovan Mitchell loves those screens.
We got one, two, three.
Number five, you're probably not going to get, but number four, you should get. who runs like pretty much the most amount of pick and rolls every game in the East? They're a playoff team. Who runs all types of pick and rolls for their guards? Because their guards are the best players.
The Nets?
Yep.
So Jared Allen?
Jared Allen's number four at 4.7. And last, you have a team that's in contention for the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference.
Vooch.
Vooch is number five at 4.5 assists or screen assists per game.
Whew, hot damn. Vooch.
Finally, a stat about big men.
Finally, it's like the whole like all of it this week, man.
Yeah, no.
God damn,
showing some love.
That was for you, banger in the paint.
Far from it. Trying to develop my 3-point shot. New NBA. I don't want to be phased out like JV.
It's a real stretch four over here, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
All right. There will be no JV slander on this podcast.
Oh, there's gonna be lots of JV slander on this podcast.
Yeah, man. JV's leading Memphis to the. I guess out of the lottery. Out of the top three anyway.
He's doing it all wrong. They want him to not perform so well.
JV's a winner.
Yo, shouts to Memphis. They've won three straight behind Conley and JV leading this team. They're that team that just spoils it for every playoff team right now.
Love in Phoenix.
And shout out to Dallas as well for stealth tanking and trying to get in the top five so they don't have to give up their pick to Atlanta this year.
You know who they're running? Like, who's their starting lineup right now? Name it off really quickly for Dallas.
Brunson, Doncic, Hardaway, Dorian Finney-Smith, I believe, and then they have Dwight Powell. And their bench is just an atrocity.
This is like the best tanking ever, man.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, Luka gets his stats, and the rest of the guys, they don't really do a whole hell of a lot.
Yo, they might actually end up with a worse record than the Hawks.
It's possible. I mean, the Hawks are playing a lot better than them, so you know, and they have a lot better talent over around Trey right now. Anyway, with John Collins just going off every game
and Kevin Huerter.
Imagine how much better that trade is going to look for Dallas if they actually get in the top five or the bottom five, I guess you could say in this case. And then next year, Porzingis comes back, and they likely make the playoffs. And then all they have to give up is like the 20th pick in the draft instead of a top five or I guess a 6 to 30 type of pick this year.
That'd be insane. I mean, they're doing it the right way. Hunt started at the beginning, and then, you sort of just cool off while nobody's looking.
Yeah.
It's a smart way. Cuban, announce that tank again, man. Get another fine.
Genius.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's all the time we have this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Hit us up on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. And until next time, peace.